Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Pop-Up Radio, Episode 5. Bruce Hornsby, please roll tape and cameras rolling. Go.
Hi, welcome back to Pop-Up Radio. I'm Eric Warden, your genial host. Pop-Up Radio is a podcast devoted to community, with a special focus on music, the arts, pop culture, local business, nonprofit, the things that unite us. I've been a radio host for a lifetime. On air, you can find me doing mornings 6 to 10 on 93.7 Bob FM. We stream at 93.7bobfm.com, and you can find our free app on iTunes and Google Play. Today, episode 5 of Pop-Up Radio features the incomparable Bruce Hornsby. Native son of Williamsburg, Virginia, multiple Grammy Award winner. Of course, got his start right here in the 757. Classics like The Way It Is and Mandolin Rain and The Valley Road. But 35 years later, well, he's as prolific as ever. Bruce is back with his latest called Flicted. We'll cover some of his newest offerings, not only featuring his band The Noisemakers, but his continuing who's who of collaborators. But first, let's set the tone with what I call one of his more modern classics, originally from his 2004 album Halcyon Days. Here's a live version of Circus on the Moon, recorded live in Boulder, Colorado, Bruce Hornsby and the Noisemakers on Pop-Up Radio.
You're glad we played this one, JD. I'm the perfect little four for the prognosticators of doom. I'll bet you in a minute they'll be searching my room. Looked out for the deluge, I believe it's coming soon. Bet you $5 we'll see the start come out at noon, come out at noon. I bet you $5 we'll see the stars come out at noon, come out at noon. About as much attention as about as much attention as about as much attention as the circus on the moon.
Thank you.
huge, I believe it's coming soon. And I'll bet you $5 we'll see the stars come out at noon. You can bet all you got, I'll get your attention soon. Getting about as much attention as it's a circus on the moon. In dreams, I walk with you. In dreams, I talk to you. Artist in my circus on the moon. Lonely tightrope walker in my circus on the moon. Accomplished virtuoso in my circus on the moon. Waving at you sweetly from my circus on the moon. A million miles away I'm staring at you, staring at you. Waving at you sweetly from my circus on the moon. Standing tall and low, oh, circus on the moon. Mm-hmm. 3 million miles away I'm staring at you in my circus on the moon. In dreams I walk, in dreams I talk to you. Pretty good cloud, they call us sad. Tickles in my room every night. Don't you whisper, go to sleep. Everything is all right. Hey, in dreams I talk to you.
Circus on the Moon, live with Bruce Hornsby and the Noisemakers, 2018. Fast forward now to modern day, where Bruce has recently released his 23rd album, called Flicted. Pop-Up Radio is honored to say hello to my friend Bruce Hornsby.
Hello.
Mr. Hornsby, how the heck are you?
Hey, Eric, what's going on, man?
Looks like you're in the hot house right now.
I'm in our studio, the hot house. What do you mean by that? You mean the studio?
Yeah.
We call the studio now, we call it the Large Cloth-Eared Collider. I don't know if you're a physics fan, but the reference to the Large Hadron Collider in CERN, Switzerland.
Oh, that's so
17-mile
cool.
Track that particles collide and they find new physics. But anyway, it came about, it's got a funny story behind it. That's where, so I'll tell it because this is where I am right now.
Sure. So you're in Williamsburg right now, at least.
Yeah, I'm in Williamsburg in my studio, the Large Cloth-Eared Collider. So years ago, when I first got my record deal, RCA, the great Paul Atkinson, I'm so proud to say that the guy who signed me at RCA Records in 85 was the rhythm guitar player for the Zombies.
Wow.
Wow is right. Well, Paul Atkinson was his name. We lost him in the late 90s, but he was a beautiful guy. And he, He didn't think what I'd given him, what we'd given him, was commercial, but he just couldn't stop listening to it. He didn't think it was a hit. He just loved it. So that's beautiful. So anyway, I guess they approached Gus Dudgeon, the great Elton John producer.
Sure.
I ended up working with him subsequently on the Elton John tribute record a few years later, Two Rooms. Gus was the producer. So anyway, they pitched Gus on producing my record, and he passed on it. And he was heard to say, you know, the C word is offensive in America, but it's like common parlance in Britain, okay. You know. And he's such a so Gus Dudgeon was heard to say, after we sort of went far and pretty far, pretty fast on the first record, he was heard to say, "Oh, I'm the cloth-eared C word. I'm the cloth-eared C that passed on him."
Oh, yes.
So we always thought it was a hilarious. It's more hilarious if you can say the word, but we probably can't hear. So,
well, in the podcast world, we probably can, but I know it probably gives you a little bit of a bad name. But I don't think you really care, because I don't think you've never cared about staying in your lane. What the heck is a lane in the world of Bruce Hornsby?
Well, that's a fact. But yeah, so right, he was heard to say, "Oh, I'm the cloth-eared cunt that passed on it."
There you go.
So just this past year, I've been working on two records at the same time, Afflicted being one of them. Another one is another story. We've been working on a song for probably 8 months here, in and out of tours and this, doing other this and that. And I heard this, a vocal of mine. And I went, "You know what, man?" I said to my guy, Wayne Pooley, who's been working with me forever. I said, "You know what? We call him Daigle, named after an old cook at the Cave on 17th Street." That's another story.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you got a million of them. I know. We only have so much time, but I love all of them.
Well, anyway, it's just goofiness. It's just fun. So I said to Daigle, "That vocal of mine is just out of tune. I can't believe I haven't heard that for the last 8 months. I haven't even noticed it. And while I'm at it, I can't believe you didn't hear it either." You know, so I'm saying, you know what? We're the cloth-eared.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, the cloth-eared collider, the large cloth-eared collider.
For me, you know, you took us in there. When I talk about it being the hothouse, when you released that album, and I was lucky enough to be at your house that day.
Okay.
And you took us on a tour inside there, and you had brought in so many amazing musicians. I mean, it's such a litany. All the people you've worked with, you've got to sometimes just sit back and go, how did that all happen? But it's still happening and whatnot. But I remember distinctly over in the corner, you bad-mouthing Joshua Cadison. To me, you badmouthed an up and coming, whatever he was. And it was hilarious to me.
Yeah, I regret that.
Don't regret it. You got to stand by it, man, because you were right.
I don't know. Maybe in my dotage, I'm trying to be a little less direct about that. I remember Joshua Cadison. He had a nice pop hit. I had all this pop success, but it wasn't what I was going after. The Way It Is was a song about racism with two improvised solos. It's hardly the formula. And so it was a wonderful accident and blah, blah, blah. So that's that. But right. So you were here with Butch Wall and the RCA team. Yeah, that was a good bunch of guys.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know your time is limited, and you know the reason why. First of all, thanks for joining me here. Pop-Up Radio is something I've been trying to focus a little bit more on because of the connections I've made over the years. And there are very few artists that I've probably been connected to longer than you, at least somebody that's at the level. There's very few, I think, musically at the level. I think the talent you have just in doing, wasn't it Monkey Fingers? What was the tune? Just like you had a...
Spider Fingers.
Just watching you was nuts. Right. So, but that
that's
talent
from that
is,
Outhouse record. Right?
I know. I remember. But let's go back to the beginning. Pop-Up Radio, as well as just anybody who's local here in the 757, lost an icon last week. And when we think about people who open doors historically for artists, I mean, whether you hear whether it's urban legend that it was Diana Ross that really opened the gate for the Jacksons or whatever.
Okay, right. I've heard that.
There's somebody, whether it's at a showcase that maybe Bruce Hornsby gets to be in front of these elite folks from RCA or any other label for that matter. Everybody goes through that. But even before that, it seems like the door that I heard that was swung open the widest was done by a lady by the name of Kathy Moore, and we lost her last week. Can you tell me what it means to you to look back on her life and what she represents in what we are now looking at, this amazing career of Bruce Hornsby?
Well, she represents the archetype, the paradigm for local talent spotters and also booking agents. That's really what she was a booking agent. So when you're an agent, you know, on a regional level like Kathy was, you're always looking for someone who you think can not get fired at the local lounge, at the Steak and Ale, Janiff Shopping Center, or the Cave, or the Tobacco Company in Richmond. You know, I keep naming King's Head Inn. She booked all of this, from lounges to the rock clubs, and we played all of them, from Brick House and Shake Your Booty at the Ramada Inn to Asia and Running on Empty at the King's Head Inn, and then my own music at the time. So she was a seminal figure in our early days. We were with a guy named DC Allman originally, booked us in some clubs. There's a guy named Charlie Bradshaw, who was also a booking agent, maybe one of Kathy's competitors.
Here in the 757?
We were a band here from summer of 1977 until late winter of 80. So about 2.5 years we were around here. It seems like it was longer, but it really wasn't that long. Then we moved to LA because I'd gotten sort of recognized as a songwriter out there, and blah, blah, blah. So this guy comes to our gig, and we had this one of our old teachers who is now living in Greensboro. And so he came up to fill in on guitar. And this guy was sort of a Mahavishnu John McLaughlin devotee. He wore sort of the Sri Chinmoy bowling suit, as some people called it. And he was up there just roaring away on "That's the Way, I'm Like It." You know, we're just playing a lounge gig and we're just blowing crazy. We're into jazz and stretching. And so young Stan Simoli is his name, a diminutive fellow. And he's over there roaring away. And so my brother, Bobby Hornsby, who was the guy who dealt with all the bookers, Kathy was always such a joy compared to some of the others. Anyway, he goes to sit with this guy, Charlie Bradshaw. And Charlie Bradshaw's first thing he says to my brother is, "That little Indian takes too many rides." It's so beautiful.
Oh.
It's one of the best. If Charlie Bradshaw, I salute you for coming up with one of the great lines of our lounge years and club years. But so Kathy was this beacon in this sea of nuttiness that we were involved with in this milieu of the local club scene. And so we played from Virginia Beach to Richmond for those 2.5 years. We played a little bit down the south. We got fired a lot for playing too much jazz and et cetera. Everybody hated it, but I understand. But Kathy saw through all this, and she could tell that there was something in there that had a potential to be special. And so she started booking us. Oh, she booked us at some hilarious gigs early on. We played a place called T's Pub in Murfreesboro, North Carolina. We get there only to realize this just straight biker bar, country, Southern rock. Some guy comes up to me and said, "Y'all know Black Betty Bamaland."
She just wanted to get your money. That's it. She just wants you to get paid.
Oh, it was all good. But we're out there playing Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know.
Sure.
The Mighty, Mighty. Everybody hated us. The country boys in the bar were staring daggers at us in our matching disco leisure suits. So,
right.
So she was there really from the early days. And then saw it on through until we got discovered, you know, by Mike McDonald at we through Whisper Concerts. I think Kathy was booking it for Whisper then.
Mm-hmm.
They booked the Doobies at the Coliseum. So from that, we found out they were staying at the Sheraton Coliseum. And yeah, my big drummer Molo and I went over and found him in the lobby, Mike. And we went up to him and said, "Hey, man, we're the baddest motherfuckers in this town, but and you should come over here. We're right across the street at the Steak and Ale, you know." So he did. Long story short, he did. And he was really sort of deeply interested in what we did. And that started my long journey, frankly, toward getting a record contract. That was December 1, 1978. And I got signed in the spring of 1985.
Oh, my gosh. You know, for the people who are, you know, see them as overnight successes, so many of the artists, they've just been beating it up for years on the road and playing these little gigs like you're talking about. But it's so cool that you were recognized. Actually, Doobies played the amphitheater just the other Monday night.
I knew they were there. So, Mike McDonald, my discoverer and founder. That's
wow.
What I call.
Wow. Well, Kathy, we'll be laid to rest here. I'm sure by the time many people hear or watch this, you know, the beauty of podcasts, you can do it on your own, but it is a timely thing. And I'd love to use a quote from you on my morning show on Bob FM. Could you put it in a couple of sentences, the things that Kathy Moore meant to Bruce Hornsby?
Kathy Moore was the model. She was the archetype, the paradigm for a beautiful presence on the regional club scene, always looking for special qualities in the groups she was hearing and wanted the best for them. She worked to get the groups better money. She just was the model, this person that we all hope to run into, but rarely do.
I believe you actually thanked her among others from the Grammy stage.
I was going to say that. I did thank her when we won the Best New Artist in February 87. And so that shows, you know, we weren't forgetting about Kathy because she was special and she was again, sort of pivotal in our early days, pivotal in our sort of rise.
And the Best New Artist is Bruce Hornsby and the
not just me, it's the range too. But like Steve, I have my own little list here. People to thank. This is great, y'all. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank Kathy Hornsby and John Hornsby and the rest of the large Hornsby clan out in Virginia. Kathy Moore and Bill Reed and all our friends in Virginia. And our head cheerleader, Huey Lewis. Thank you very much, everybody.
I'm such a admirer of the fact that you have not remained in your lane. I was even looking at a thing on iTunes when I went and bought the album. I know that your manager, Kevin, I'm sure would have offered me some free stuff, but it's like, I want to support you in more than just a stream. You know what I mean?
Well, thanks. I mean, who buys? I appreciate that. Cause you know, the record sales are a thing of the past for the most part.
Absolutely. But as I looked at some of the, you know, feedback there on iTunes, one guy is like, great, you know, all loving it because he's all about whatever you are. And then the next one is a woman saying, I miss the old Bruce. And it's like, you know what? Yeah.
That's right.
I'm thinking, you know, how lucky is this man to A, have worked with all these amazing people, and then B, be able to continue.
Well, I don't think it's luck. I think luck is incorrect. These people reached out to me because what I was doing was something that moved them deeply. So that's not luck.
That's true.
That's just passion. That's just someone who, because again, people don't reach out to you to collaborate if they don't think you can enhance what
absolutely.
They do. They
absolutely.
Don't love it. So luck, not buying it there, Eric.
Fortunate. I would say you've certainly made your own fortune. But when I look at, I just wrote down a list of some people, and you know, we could go over your history and everything between the first album. I know. The whole thing between, you know, playing with a Lynn drum machine and suddenly finding yourself having a number one record. And, you know, I go back to that release. You know, I met you at Key Largo in Portland, Oregon. The RCA guy had told our program director, who happened to be from Richmond. You probably remember John Barry. And so he's still in Richmond, and he was getting ready to leave and come back to Virginia. I didn't know that, but I went with him because there was this new artist that RCA was saying was the next Billy Joel. Actually, he was much closer to the next Elton John. And I know Elton had a huge impact on the kind of a music you would fall in love with because you didn't really start off as a pianist even, but as we look forward, you know, I mean, so much has happened. So much has happened from the Spike Lee stuff to the you writing Sick Bastard. I really honestly think you should, because of your love of lyric and story, I could see you doing a Broadway play, but there's only so much time in the day. And you curate the Funhouse Festival and, you know, the soundtrack action. I mean, how did all of this happen, Bruce?
Well, again, it's actually a fairly simple answer. It happened. It happened because people through the years were moved by something that they heard me do. And they thought, wow, this is something special. And I would like to have this be a part of what I do, whether it was Spike Lee. I mean, I'm not going to go name dropping, but you know the name.
Do a fine job of that for you.
But so that's really it. It happened purely the way it's supposed to happen. And so the stylistic gamut is very, very broad. It's very disparate, obviously, from Spike Lee to Grateful Dead to the modern day, where I'm working mostly with younger, incredible musicians and writers from the indie pop world, indie rock world.
Doesn't that make you feel younger or live younger? Because I'm in my 60s. I'm thinking you must be 65, 66 or something like that.
67.
Who is playing with Bon Iver? Who's playing with Justin Vernon? Who's playing with, I mean, I'm a big fan of James Mercer. When I heard you were working with him, I went, ow!
Love it. Love him. Well, look, I'm always interested, as opposed to the person who misses the old Bruce, probably they're not so interested in keeping up with what's going on now.
Yeah.
Look, the arc of a pop music life, it goes like this to me. You discover pop music at age 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there, and your friends like it, and you're totally involved all through middle school, all through high school. And if you go to college, then college, and you keep up and you're really, really deeply involved with it. And then you become an adult. You may get a job in your early 20s or your before. And by mid 20s, though, you get to the point where, and then for the rest of your life, for 93% of the populace, they listen to the music of their youth or current music that sounds exactly like that stylistically. Mm-hmm. And so for someone who has an interest in retaining a career of any length in the face of that massive indifference, because most people, again, they just turn off. They go to a concert for their nostalgic night out, for their stroll down memory lane. And I understand it. I get it. I'm not criticizing that at all. That's just the way it is. Okay. So I'm fighting for that 7% who continues through their life to be interested in adventure and music and music up in the now. And so it's been beautiful for me, because after I started getting entreaties from my heroes, you know, Robbie Robertson, Bob Dylan, you know, these people are reaching out to me because they're interested in what I do. They're moved by it. And so there I am working with all these heroes of mine for many years, Dead, et cetera. And then in my dotage, in my senescence now, my late career, it's turned around. Now this younger group has been shouting me out as their influence and wanting to work with me. So again, it's all the same. It's all for the same reason, whether it's the older artists reaching out to me when I was younger. I wasn't that freaking young. I was 30 when I got my deal. So really late comparatively, but a slow learner, you could call me, seriously. but then it reverses. Now I'm in my late 60s, and these 30-year-old people are reaching out to me. So what could be more beautiful? So in that case, you could say lucky me. But again, these people only do it because they're passionate about my thing. Justin Vernon, he's the guy who really opened this door for me. And I walked through this room only to find that there are a whole lot more people in that room who felt the same way about me that he did, as he did. So as recanting from Vampire Weekend on the new record, Damiel Heim from Heim. So, yeah. So it just continues on. And James Mercer, God, I just love it. I love him so much. But that's the reason I always tell people who want to try to get something going. I say, well, look, it's an easy statement. You have to move someone who has the power to help you. You have to move that person and make them just give them chills.
Yeah.
That's what happened with Paul Atkinson at RCA, and it's continued to happen with the musicians. So that's kind of it.
Let's listen in on one of those collaborations you just mentioned. This one features Ezra Koenig of New York's awesome indie band Vampire Weekend, along with a multi-talented Blake Mills. This is called Sidelines on Pop-Up Radio.
I'm traveling down to Salem. I'm a judge in a jury trial. Got to get there by morning sunrise. Got to save someone's innocence. and life. Open up, hysteria. Fear that I had a fever pitch. Fever streets, walk, don't walk. Crowded sky up, ventilators, antennas out. Under my moving sky, moving sky. Moving road, billboards flying by. Rental cars, tubes and tires and chains. Then everything around me silently linked. Signs generating reality. Open up hysteria. Fear that I had a fever pitch. Fever streets, walk, don't walk.
That's Sidelines on Pop-Up Radio. The album is Flicted by my special guest Grammy winner Bruce Hornsby. And he also had some help there from Ezra Koenig of Vampire Weekend. I had heard a story that you were largely inspired by Elton John, namely he and Bernie Taupin's Amarina from the album Tumbleweed Connection.
Yeah, I can tell you the old story, and I have a very good current story.
I can't wait to hear it. But let me ask you this. If that's true, then why, when you were asked to perform on the 1991 Elton and Bernie tribute album called Two Rooms, you got to work with Gus Dudgeon after all?
Yeah, we had the best time.
But you didn't get to do the song. Was somebody else already in on that? Give us that story, because...
No, Amarina was the first song that Bobby Hornsby played me on the Colonial Parkway going down to visit our cousins in Yorktown when
cool.
I was in 11th grade, 10th, 11th grade. So Amarina was the one. But I didn't pick that because the contrarian, I wanted to take a song and turn it into something completely different.
Mm.
So I turned Mad Men Across the Water into sort of a McCoy Tyner.
Can you see the bumps on my arm just thinking about your version of Mad Men? Wow.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, most of the versions on Two Rooms were very, they were virtual replications of the old with a different singer. Every case, a great singer, way better than I am. But I was proud of our thing because it was not like so many others on the record. It was like Kate Bush did a beautiful thing. I forget what she did, but that hers was very different too. Look, that's who I want. I want to make it a creative challenge and make it something, turn it into something new. And so that's the story about Amarina and Mad Men. But then recently, from the new record, there's a song, the aforementioned Daniel Heim does a duet with me on a song called Days Ahead.
And we're gonna finish the interview with that afterwards. In fact,
okay. Well, let me finish the script, because if you're going into Days Ahead, it's the perfect ending.
Cool.
Because people can hear it for themselves. So I had the song Days Ahead. I'd written it. We were finished with the record. Danielle had sung her great parts and great performance. But there was this one part in the song that always hit me. Well, this song is very reminiscent of a part of one of Elton's songs. Someone Saved My Life Tonight.
Yeah.
The Sugar Bear
sugar
part.
Bear.
Sugar Bear, Sugar Bear. So yeah. I'm thinking, I knew this for the last year since I'd written it and then subsequently worked on it for the record. But I woke up in the middle of the night. This is about 2 months ago. And I thought, you know what? I need to deal with this. So I got up the next morning and went to my contacts page, Elton John, called a couple of numbers. I was just going to call the management, trying to get through to Elton in this way. So I kept calling these numbers and they were all, hi, this is Lou. Give me a call back.
That's from a Rolodex. You needed to update your files. That's all.
Right. So I kept trying two or three numbers. Finally, I tried a 404 number, which is an Atlanta area. And Elton has had a place there for many years. And so I called this number and someone answers, hello, a woman. It's usually, you know, hello, Rocket Entertainment or something like that. I've got the house. Okay. So this is crazy. Okay, fine. Hi, Bruce Hornsby for Elton John. Let me see these about. Of course, meaning, let me see if he wants to talk to your sorry ass, you know. So I go, okay, I get it. I understand what she means by let me see if he's about. Then about 15, 20 seconds go by and then passing you through.
Excellent.
And so he goes, he gets, you know, hello, darling. And then it was off. And so this is so beautiful. So we talk, we've caught up a little bit. And I said, well, this is why I'm calling. I feel like I may have nicked you, Elton, you know, may have ripped you here. So I wanted to send you this song, blah, 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 so you can make your call about it. He said, well, you know what my answer will be. I don't care. I'm not going to come after you. You know, I don't want songwriting credit, but I'm totally curious to hear it again. But no, there'll be no blood here, no foul. So I sent him the song and he wrote me back a beautiful email singing, this is wonderful and thank you so much and blah, blah. And that was it. So just 2 months ago, I had this great moment with him. And so then now you can play Days Ahead and people can hear Sugar Bear in there.
That's awesome. You almost had your hooked in me, didn't you?
Yes, didn't you, dear? Yes.
So good. So good. Well, the album is phenomenal. And my youngest son is 22, just graduated from UVA. And
fantastic. Congratulations. Yeah,
he's got a cool little band he's been doing that is quite diverse. And it's funny, I played Days Ahead for him last night. He's certainly familiar with Heim. And he was like, wow, that is so cool. And the idea that almost in a Beatles kind of a dreamy way, I love how you don't conform. There's no four on the floor with Bruce Hornsby, and there won't be. The syncopation is always going to be just so cerebral, and the players that he's got around him know it all, and they've lived it all, and they follow it. And it's like, I almost think when I hear something like this album, which isn't like your typical Bruce or whatever you want to call typical, there is no typical Bruce.
No, it's not.
And I love it. I love it. I love the different, called it disparate. It's exactly right. And the thud of stuff, what you did with Chuck Berry's tune is phenomenal.
What could be more boring than typical?
Exactly.
So I'm trying to move forward. I'm trying to evolve and grow. And in my older age, I'm trying to make a sound I haven't heard before. Now, Days Ahead is not one of those. Days Ahead is a more standard sort of Beach Boys-esque to of the pop ballad. But dotted throughout the record are moments that I think are different and don't sound, you can't say, oh, this sounds like that. And that's hard to do. And that's kind of mostly what I'm trying to do for years, but even more so now. Mm. So that's, what could be more dull than typical?
Absolutely. The song Is This It had me wondering about some things. Could you explain? I mean, it's a great, great tune. It's probably a little bit closer to what people 30 years ago would think of as being in the pocket for Bruce Hornsby, but it's your work with the dulcimer and the beauty of it all, and that the words are phenomenal. I just got to tell you, I really dig it.
Oh, thanks. The electric sitar, going back to a little painted black action there. It's sort of a whimsical take on the arbitrary nature of life that you know we could both kick right now.
Right.
You know, so right. The lyrics say it all. Walk outside your house, you could be a sitting duck. Man serves you with papers and says real nice, good luck. Oh yeah, in your car, and here comes a deer flying across the road. And a man pulls up beside you and does what he's been told. Man. You know, blast.
Yeah. So,
you know, all that. My favorite one is the fourth one, putting on my tux to dine with my wife and our friend Phil.
Yeah. I was almost, who's Phil? That's what I thought.
It rhymes with hill. We're feeling so smug and blessed in our mansion on the hill, et cetera. So, yeah, again, just trying to look, the songwriting page is pretty filled in, 36 years in. So I'm always trying to move farther afield and to find something I haven't written about or just a new slant on it. So that's the fun of it.
Do you ever have a prompter of any kind? Do you have a lyric reminder? Because your words, you have so many words in so many of your songs. How? I mean, unless you're really amping up on Prevagen, because I know at this stage, there are some challenges, and yet you are up there. And or is it the total muscle memory because you're so passionate about what you're doing? Does it all just come back? It's a lot of stuff.
You mean you're talking about memory, lapses on the road, playing live?
Lyrical, yeah. All that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, your words are, there's so many in some songs, and it's great. It's great stories.
We do have an iPad on the dulcimer area and the piano area. I don't summon it too often, but there are a few songs that we don't play. We play over 100 of my songs every year. That's again, the two things bode ill for not having to use a teleprompter, an iPad. And that is, one, you've got a whole lot more songs to remember. And two, you're older. So, you know, you can't count on that. People always tell me, oh, Bruce, you've got such a great memory. And my standard line is, yeah, except when I don't, you know. And so that's the same with this. I'll find myself spacing out. It's amazing how many times I've been up there playing live in front of people and what's this next word? And it'll come to me at the last minute, but sometimes it doesn't. And I don't sort of bum out wide. I just laugh about it. I pull a Bob Weir and just go, you know, oops, you know,
keep rolling.
Yeah. Keep rolling. Exactly. Man. Right. I'm not worried about it.
Well, you're doing some dates. I know you'll be in Northern Virginia before we know it. I do want you to give my best, if you would, please, to. Yeah, I got a friend going to the show, as a matter of fact. But please give my best to Gibby Droll. When I first came to town, dude, 1993, I arrived in this market, and he was, of course, playing locally quite a bit. And so I had done some, you know, reviews of several of his solo efforts early on, locally done, and did it for Portfolio Magazine. And what a sweet, sweet spirit of a guy. And your band is just freaking, it's just crazy. It's how super talented they are.
Well, thanks, man. Gibb's been a great gift. When I was making a change, my guys at Red Light Management sent me files on 12 guitarists. And I like this one guy who played kind of like Garcia, but his groove was not quite like Garcia's. And then I hear this guy who's grooving his ass off, and that's Gibb. And just really playing so great. And so I picked him, and that's been 9 years ago. So great. Love him. He's our favorite. One of our favorites.
One of the many noisemakers. The album is Flicted. I believe it's your 23rd, give or take. I know you got a ton of live stuff in between, and you can find Bruce anywhere, certainly online, but it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here on Pop-Up Radio, man.
Thanks, Eric. And now you can send your listeners to Days Ahead World, and they can hear me just ripping his ass off.
We can do that. It's called Days Ahead with Danielle Heim. It is phenomenal, and I hope you can go out and get the latest from Bruce. It's called Flicted. Thanks again, my friend.
Thanks. Great to talk to you, Eric. See you.
I'm caught here in my small square. You love me, but we need some air. We'll be okay. That I'm pretty certain. If I stretch my arms, we almost touch. Never felt alone so much. Would you agree to pulling back the curtain? There will be days ahead, I'm pretty sure.
brightening light of rays in this world.
This world.
That our friends could see. Remember when we tried to learn German?
I told you what I learned today, that this all too shall pass away.
It sounded like a stale sermon.
There will be days ahead. Brightening light of rays in this world.
This world.
There will be days ahead, I'm pretty sure. Brightening light of rays in this world.
This world.
Really kind of sure. Anticipating days ahead. As time goes on, I've come to see how much these days have meant to me. I know my feelings aren't always vocal. When we emerge unconfined, I'm pretty sure that you will find my love for you is total.
There will be days ahead, I'm pretty sure.
That's Days Ahead featuring Danielle Heim, just one of 12 outstanding tracks on his new release, Flicted. Bruce Hornsby. He's touring to support his new music with shows from the Barns of Wolf Trap to the famous Troubadour of West Hollywood. Make plans to see him when he comes home to the Ferguson Center for the Arts. That'll be on November 4th. Tickets are on sale now. Special thanks to Bruce Hornsby for joining me today and to his manager, Kevin Monty of Red Light Management Charlottesville, for arranging this interview. Pop-Up Radio is produced by yours truly from the cozy confines of my mobile podcast studio, a sparkling, gleaming 1972 Airstream Ambassador land yacht. Pop-Up Radio theme music is by Drew Armstrong and The Radio Room. Pop-Up Radio originates on the Anchor podcast platform and is shared on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, among others. A cassette copy of today's show is available exclusively at Akbar and Jeff's Tofu Hut. where the elite meet to eat reheated meaty treats. If you are digging Pop-Up Radio, please tell a friend, share, like, love. And while you're at it, like and love those around you, okay? Questions or comments, email me at gamewarden@me.com. That's GAMEWORDEN @me.com. Till next time, be blessed. I'm Eric Warden, and I will see you on the radio.
Hi, this is Bruce Hornsby on Pop-Up Radio.